Welcome to The Influential Nonprofit, the show for nonprofit leaders to grow their influence so they can grow their income and impact. Now here's your host, Marianne Dersch.
Okay, hello. It's another episode of The Influential Nonprofit, and this is Marianne, your host. You guys know me already, but you don't know my new friend, Morgan Gross. Morgan, where are you talking to me from today?
I am actually talking to you from Zambia, Africa.
So all right. We are a global village.
Yes.
And we are going to talk about international fundraising, which is the topic I have not talked about. And I'm very excited to talk about because a lot of the times people reach out to me from other countries and I don't really know how to help them. And I feel bad because I know that there is a need and that, but this is just not my expertise. So I'm glad to know you because we're going to talk about this. So if you are a fundraiser or a CEO of an organization that's international, this is your episode.
Okay, great. Now, thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Now, we always start with the first question, which is tell me something that you're really proud of that you don't get to brag about a lot. So it's kind of something about you that you're really proud of that you don't really talk about a lot.
Yeah. So I would say I was a city girl and I was born and raised either in Houston or Dallas. And when I moved out to Zambia, Africa in 2016, didn't expect to be here 8 years later. And I now live on an extremely rural farm. So I am about an hour and a half away to the closest teeny tiny town and do most of my grocery shopping about 6 hours away.
Wow.
So I would say the fact that I moved and now live in the middle of nowhere in Africa in a foreign, very foreign place, but now consider home. And it was a big step to move from the city to a very rural farm in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, right. And not just a very rural farm in the middle of nowhere, a very rural farm in the middle of nowhere of another country, another culture.
Exactly. And then back to, I would say, you know, being able to build my business from here.
Right. That's another thing is, isn't it the beauty of this medium of Zoom, of all the ways that we can be connected? And really geography kind of is, I mean, geography is, it just really means nothing anymore. You know,
I know.
And, you know, all the young folks, because I'm a lady of a certain age, all you young folks, they're like I had a VA and she was Lithuanian, but she was riding out the pandemic in Thailand, you know, and she just did her business. You know, she did all my assisting from there. It didn't matter where she was. And I have a woman working with me right now. She's amazing. And she's in South Africa. So all we have to worry about are time zones, though.
Exactly. And you make it work. I know I have a lot of clients in South Africa as well, but then I have clients in Canada and the U.S. And the U.S. itself has different time zones. So you just make it work.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Oh, wait, I want to ask you really quick because people may be curious. So what brought you to Zambia? Like what was like, you just did a wake up one morning and said, I would like to live 6 hours from civilization.
Sure. So my background is actually in education. So when I was in second grade, I literally said, I want to become a second grade teacher. And that's exactly what I did. So I went to University of Missouri right there, you know, go Tigers.
Yes. I know Marianne, both former, alum as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Former Tigers. So went to school there and then in 2014 co-founded a nonprofit. So I was teaching second grade. I was also fundraising for this nonprofit, running that, and then also had this third passion for travel. So I taught abroad. I had done several mission trips and volunteer trips all around the world, but hadn't yet made it to Africa. And so really had always just been so interested. And, you know, my favorite part about traveling is the curiosity behind it, being able to listen and learn from new cultures and new people and try new things and food. And so hadn't made it to Africa. And so decided, do I use my set skills still in the classroom environment or should I go somewhere else? And decided to take what was supposed to be 6 month internship to Livingston, Zambia. I was developing a curriculum for their gender equality program for a nonprofit, as well as fundraising. And I really enjoyed the fundraising side and ended up staying with that nonprofit for about almost 3 years and moved to Cape Town and travel all across East and Southern Africa. So that's kind of how I initially started out here.
Wow. Okay. That's amazing. And all the way from Columbia, Missouri.
Exactly.
What? You have an adventurous spirit. I love that. Okay, I want to ask him kind of a base question, which is there a difference between like an organization that is based, you know, in another country, or like a lot of my clients, like one of my very best clients is based in the US, but she fundraises for an organization in Africa. So is there a difference in approach or not?
Yeah, good question. So a lot of the organizations I work for, when we talk about international fundraising, they're established in one country, but fundraising and utilizing global donors. So I kind of have two subsections within my company. So we, a lot of our fractional fundraising clients, we work with a lot of North American nonprofits that are changing lives globally. So they have a North American arm, but they, and they're fundraising in North America, but a lot of their programs are abroad. So whether that's Africa, wherever it might be, I've worked with clients all around the world.
Right.
So you kind of have that subsection. And then the other section is, you know, they might be based in Africa. I have a lot of clients here, especially in South Africa, that are wanting to go abroad and find international donors. And maybe right. that is America or the UK. So what that international means is they're based in one place, but they're wanting to start to find international donors or their programs are abroad.
Yeah. Okay. And so it's pretty much the same thing, right? I mean, like as far as the approach or, you know.
The approach is very, very similar. We could talk about that more, but it is similar, especially when it comes to like your basic foundations of building donor trust and my global presence.
So I've had three or four, maybe four or five clients through the years, like who've done my program, my influence program, that were CEOs of organizations. And the majority of their work was India, Haiti, Guatemala, you know, Rwanda. And it's like, that was a big, the cultural barriers, the, you know, language, you know, one of my clients, Annie, she worked so hard just to form communication, you know, relate just with the program people. I think it's an extra layer of dedication, you know, and she went there for 2 weeks. And like another client I had for a while who was interim executive director of this organization in Haiti, like going, you know, like going there, it was a lot to learn and a lot to like, it just, I think it's a whole other layer that like, if you're practicing and doing program that you don't deal with.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's when I'm working with nonprofits and developing custom fundraising plans for them and their budgets, we oftentimes have to put in a budget line items for that, exactly. So it's professional development. How can you have cross cultures and working across different time zones and, you know, just different things like that. So you often have to put in budgets for that and to be mindful of that, because it's also, you know, how do you communicate within your organization? So that's a whole nother different conversation outside of fundraising. But yes, you definitely have to take those things into consideration. And, you know, oftentimes I think about too with nonprofits and fundraising is different currencies. So how do you make sure that you can have your online donation page optimized for different currencies and working across with different banks and things like that? So yes, you definitely have to take a lot of those things into consideration.
Okay. From a fundraising perspective, is it harder to build like connections or donor? Like, does it feel so far away as it's harder to connect to, or do you have to work harder to make the connection? Because I think a lot of people could say, oh, yes, of course, there's, you know, these people who are struggling in this village in Rwanda, but then there's people who are struggling like down the street from me.
Right, right. Absolutely. The answer is yes. And that's exactly why I started Fundraising Beyond Borders, was to support international nonprofits with their fundraising, because it's just different. We have to work differently than a national organization. And where we begin to kind of start working differently is our foundations. And with that foundations is how do we start to develop donor trust? So we have to just work a little bit harder, because oftentimes our donors haven't experienced or gone through what your beneficiaries are going through. Yeah. So for example, they don't, you know, I work with an organization, they're based in America and Tanzania, and they provide education to their kiddos in a very rural village. You know, American donors don't understand that some, you know, girls have to walk 5 miles just to get to school, you know, or they don't have access to clean water, or they don't aren't allowed to go to school during their menstrual cycle or whatever it might be. So it's can you start to really storytell, but ethically storytell to your donors and start to build that donor trust through storytelling. And so whenever I work with a new client, that is the foundations, is how are we going to build donor trust? And that can look through certain different ways. That can be via your social media. That can be through your website, your online presence. And so when people come to me and they're like, hey, Morgan, how do I fundraise internationally? The key is building up your online digital presence. So what does it look like online? And so that's the first key, is that building that donor trust. And you're just going to have to work a little bit harder than a national organization.
Okay. I hear what you're saying about building that online presence. But when you say like work a little harder, does that mean like be a little more patient? You know, it may take a little longer. So I'm not sure, like I think working harder, just what does that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So for the first thing is, and I'll go back to storytelling. So we have to be able to slow down our storytelling process and really explain to somebody what a beneficiary is going through, or what a behind the scenes looks like, or what an everyday looks like for your nonprofit. So you're going to have to really kind of slow down that process and paint a clearer picture. So work harder. So don't assume that your donors understand what's going on across the globe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense, because I could see, like, if in America, and I'm working with an organization who works with unhoused people, like there's a lot of assumptions I can make about what it's like to be an unhoused. Not everything, right? But there are some, you know, cultural assumptions. You know what I'm saying, that we could make about that situation, where you wouldn't have to explain it all the way. In the US, we have everything we need. It's just getting access to it, right? I believe that is true for everywhere, but I just feel like if the access was in America is like a foot away, the access to you is like 6 feet away. And you see what I'm saying? Like, it's there, just a little bit harder to get to. And so in a way, it's like, oh, we have these resources. It's just a matter of attaching people to resources. And essentially, it's, you're like, yes, that's true. But that distance is a little wider, right? And so you're not thinking about, oh, people can't, you know, girls can't go to school when they're on their cycle or things like that. Like, that wouldn't even occur to us. The other thing that I find really fascinating is like how far money goes.
Yes.
So a colleague of mine founded an organization in Haiti. She's Haitian. And that she said, I can have $250 will pay for a girl to go to school for a full year.
Right.
And it's like, exactly. Well, that's a lot of power and spending there. You know, I mean, that you, like, certainly that wouldn't go in the US. So I do feel like there is some economy of scale there. Like, a little bit amount of money can probably go a long way. Is that your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely dependent on the country, but yes. And I think that leads to also transparency. So we work a lot on, so yes, building donor trust, storytelling, and then just being very transparent as well. And that all goes into, you know, building that donor trust. But how can you, you know, show your financials? And we talk a lot about, you know, on your building your digital presence is on your website, you know, showing any awards or financials or just different things like that. So how can you also, in your impact reports, showing exactly where that dollar is going? Because that, to then a potential donor, they're going to be able to see exactly that journey, right? Because oftentimes, if you're in America, you know that landing point. So if you're working with a national org, or you're donating to a national organization, you know, if I'm donating to a food bank, this is just an example, you kind of have somewhat of an idea of what type of food that they're going to be receiving or support, but you have no idea what type of food that they're going to be receiving in Tanzania, or that's where it's going to. So it's showing that transparency of where your dollar is going.
Okay. The other thing I think that is, I think could be, you know, really interesting is the idea of how do I create relationships from this? So I guess my next question would be, yes, I understand the gift of my online presence. How do I turn that into deeper donor relationships? Now, I have a very method that probably everybody listening to me has heard: awareness, interest, connection, action, right? So the social media online, that's building awareness and interest. So how do you create, when you're so far away, a deeper connection? What does that look like? So in my world, it might look like inviting somebody, you know, like I was working with a group and they, the theater, and you know, like we have these people that give every year like $500, and we would love to like have them have get a little more invested. Okay, great. When I'm a value to you, you're a value to me. Like, and there was all kinds of ideas like, oh, we could do some backstage stuff. We could do some behind the scenes tours. We could, you know, have some rehearsals. They go, because it was a physical connection. So a lot of times that next step is some sort of physical connection. If you're so far away, how do you create that deeper relationship?
Yeah, no, I'm so glad you bring this up, because so many times people come to me, they're like, we can't do donor relationships or donor stewardship because we can't invite them in person, or we can't send a postcard. You know, they hear certain things and that it has to look that way or feel that way, and it doesn't. So exactly what we're talking about at the very beginning of this conversation is how amazing it is that we can bring people together virtually these days. So how can we be creative in that? So some of my favorite things are virtual webinars or a behind the scenes take and taking, you know, them through. It could be a FaceTime. It could be a video. It could be, you know, there's so many different virtual things these days that we really need to remember we can still create connection that way. We just have to be a little bit more creative in it. I still love, some of my clients do quarterly like Q&A sessions essentially for any of their donors, where they come on, it's an hour long, and they bring some of their beneficiaries and their board members and just people part of their organization, and donors get to ask questions, and it's more donor led. Yep. And then also people get to hear, the beneficiaries get to share their stories and their perspectives. So that's a great example as well, to bring somebody virtually.
That sounds like a really amazing experience, you know?
It is, yeah. And I'll also say too, real quick before I forget, is ask people if they want to come over. There are so many people that want to travel and to learn and to listen, just like how I was. I was curious about, you know, going across the globe and leaving America. So there's some people too that want to actually come out and visit. So giving them the opportunity to visit.
Yes. I would definitely. There is a woman I adore, and she's not my client yet, but she will be. I have every intention. But anyway, she works with an organization that does programming in India, and it's a pretty big organization. And she looks for very major donors. Like, this is like more than like $20,000, right? But one of the things that they do before people even donate is you go there, right? It sounds like they're very well rehearsed. Like they just have it all set up, right? To make it really easy. Now I know like Andy out in Rwanda, it's very hard to get to the village that she's in. That might not be right. So the virtual, but that's their big thing is, hey, come along, you know, and that's what she does. She, you know, takes people and then to like, come see it. And then you can decide if you want, because this is like, this isn't $100, right? This is like a major, major investment.
An investment.
Yeah. Right. She's raising millions and millions of dollars. So, but I kind of love that idea. It's like, hey, before you decide anything, come see. But they have it so well like organized that it's really easy for people to come and visit and see. And I think that's amazing.
Yeah. So there's that side of things. And then I also, for anybody listening, is like, okay, I can't do that. We don't have the financial capacity to do that yet. But like, don't also think about just going live on Facebook, going live on Instagram, and showing behind the scenes of your everyday life. So, and have a beneficiary take the phone and show, you know, what they're going through. So you can start small to build up those donor like relationships, or even just your audience building up relationships that way. So you can definitely start small with just going live on Facebook.
Yeah, just as easy as that. Okay. You know, there was, okay, if you've ever read the book, The Soul of Money.
I have not.
Okay.
No.
Morgan, this is your homework. You didn't know you're getting, okay. So it was written by this woman named Lynn Twist, and it's not a book about fundraising. It's a book about our relationship to money. But okay. She was a hunger relief fundraiser. She was very successful at it. And the book is about her coming into reclamation of the idea of being with incredibly wealthy people, like sitting around dinner tables with people, with celebrities and movie producers and moguls that have millions of dollars. And then sitting around a table with people who have nothing, what we would see is nothing, right? But the whole book is around that actually everyone has assets, and there's assets all around us. Like, this book is life-changing. Like, you are going to weep when you read it, okay? Because there's so, on so many levels, right? Because it's not a book about fundraising. It's a book about our relationship to money. Yet she's a fundraiser, And she tells a lot of stories, which makes it even more poignant. Okay, so hang with me because I'm getting somewhere. Now, in the book, one of the things she talks about a lot is poverty porn. So in the 80s, okay, like a long time ago, like when I was in the 80s, I was in college in the 80s, right? When we had USA for Africa and Ethiopia, and that pumped billions of dollars into the African Ethiopian economy, but actually did nothing. I mean, in the end, right? Like the money didn't really create sustainable change. Okay. And what happened is people were getting, you know, the wave of interest. And once the wave of interest started to ebb, right, then they would have to get hungrier kids. And that's what she called it, poverty porn, because then you had to go find sicker kids, you know. And I remember all the images of the kids with the distended bellies and things like that, because we were losing people's attention. Okay, then more money. But it actually really didn't sustain anything. And one of the points of her book is money doesn't solve problems. People solve problems. Money is a tool that we use. But she gives lots of examples of people who incredibly impoverished, who created wealth from just very simple assets that they have. Like this one group, man, they were like seven of them. They were going to go move to another village to get work. And they went to this, she was doing these asset-based workshops, and they figured out how to use the fields that they had, and they pooled what little money they had. They bought tools. They started crops. The crops became products. The products became, they would make the fruits into jellies, the jelly, right? And like, Now this, they created a whole ecosystem in this village of like 20,000 people that had nothing. And they started with nothing. It wasn't like they had some big angel investor come and give them $100 million. Like, they just said, what little assets we have. But what it created was sustainability. And I feel like a lot of people, especially my age and older, look at organizations like that. And in our mind, we have a bias because we think these problems are so big. Can they really be solved? And I don't believe that personally. And I see that, right, like in our history of feeling like you're throwing money at something, but it really doesn't create sustainable change. Because in the end, it did not change the economy, right? But in other places that she tells these stories, and like, please listen to her, just read this book. The audiobook is beautiful too. She has a whole program around this. She's built this whole industry around this book and around fundraising through this kind of her methodology. That you look at, you know, the village in Rwanda and think, is it just like a band-aid? Is it really creating change? And I think that's a concern that people have. One, because it is so far away. And two, because it feels like it, there's so much need. How could we ever fill it?
Right. So I'm glad you bring this up because, you know, how you were talking about your methodology when it comes to donor stewardship or just, you know, any type of, whether it's a volunteer, it is any type of stewardship. One of the main key pieces for me is education. And I think it is so important, whether they are a potential donor, a donor, a supporter, whoever it is educating your community and your community about the problem that you are trying to solve or the impact that you're trying to create. And it's just like, you know, it just kind of goes back to, you know, in the nonprofit sector is so many people, so many donors don't want to give to overhead costs because they think, you know, it should all go straight to the programs. And we're right. Having to rewire people's
yes
around these things. It's the same exact way. So it is the shift. And it goes a lot into what I was talking about earlier is also like the ethical storytelling and how we storytell and what that looks and feels like. But also it's educating our donors to, I can't say it to each country, right? So there's so many different things going on. When you say international, it's so vague, right?
Yeah.
So I can't speak to every country, but how can you, wherever you are based in that country, educate your donors to show them how you're a part of a bigger system or what that final impact is? You know, for international development, you have the SDG goals. So the Sustainable Development Goals. So how maybe can you talk with your donors about the SDG goals and how it's a bigger picture on a global scale? So I would just kind of go back and figure out like, what is your mission? And I know you've talked about it on the podcast, and me and you have talked about this as well, is just like, what is the sustainability side? So what is the bigger picture and how are you creating a sustainability?
We talk about it, like, what's the exit strategy? You know,
exactly.
So Annie's goal is to help this village create using the resources that, you know, like they have the expertise, they have the assets, she has resources, right? Using those resources to create sustainability through their, you know, their education, a community center, you know, teaching trades. Like one of the things that they are working on in this village in Rwanda is they're teaching women to sew. And like, not just that, you know, they're sew their own clothes and sew the clothes for sale. Like, you know, the single moms are, you know, now providing for their kids and things like that. And so the goal is to not run this organization forever, right? The goal is to help them create something that is sustainable, right? And they can, now they're creating their own thing, right? We don't need the external resources anymore. And I'll also maybe create a model that, okay, now we did it here. Where else can we do it? Who else wants to, right?
Right. And I want to also say too, this is really huge with international development, is the power of partnerships. Do not undermine working with other nonprofits. And I think we need to do a better job at that. It's like there are some incredible nonprofits, and maybe you want to, your organization provides access to education, and maybe you start seeing, okay, education also encompasses health. Maybe it also encompasses gender equality. And there's already organizations in your community do that, partner with them. So how mm-hmm. can you join a collective movement to make a larger impact? You don't have to do everything yourself or be good by yourself. So I really recommend international nonprofits partnering with other organizations.
I think that's just really great wisdom across the board in our life in general. I feel like our industry, we feel like we sort of have to do it alone or have to figure it out ourselves. And I think that's what we were, you know, the scarcity myth, which is a lot about the joy of the soul of money, like how we bought into this idea that there's only a limited amount of money and we need to get our slice of the pie, has kept nonprofits from seeking meaningful partnerships. And you can't do it alone. And so, and it's even more critical what you're saying is an international. Now, what if you are an international, like if you are based in and you are running an organization, like say in Nigeria, but you would like to get US donors. That's where the wealth is. How do you do that?
Yeah, it's not impossible. So I just actually on my podcast with Simon.
Go.
So I just actually had a founder of an organization. He's based in Uganda. His name is Simon on my podcast. And we were talking about, so he has built an incredible global relationships. It's just blown me away. So like I said, he's from a small rural town in Uganda. And now he knows North American fundraising consultants and has spoken a lot of places. He was actually just on my summit. And we talked about how did he build meaningful relationships? And without a doubt, it takes time. But he also says, you know, one day to 1 month to 1 quarter to 1 year, it adds up over time and it builds up. So where he started was actually on LinkedIn. And how can you have meaningful relationships with somebody where they feel like it's a partnership, right? So you don't go into a conversation thinking, I am just going to straight up ask, will you become a donor for my organization? No, he introduced himself. He asked, and you know, when I first met him 3 years ago, it felt like a partnership. He asked, you know, he wanted to learn more about my company and what I did and my experience. And so over a course of time, we just got to really know each other because he created a mutual partnership, a mutual relationship. And so he started out on LinkedIn and he's done a really great job there and just reaching out and saying what he talks about is that it's really important to know that a supporter doesn't mean necessarily a financial supporter, right? Support can look through like so many different ways. It can be a volunteer. It can be a donor. It can be somebody who comes abroad and supports you. It can be they're sharing your posts on social media. There's so many different ways it can look like. So it's like how, as you're establishing these relationships, what type of support do you think that person would, I guess, what type of support is meaningful to them in that relationship and offering them different options? So I would say, you know, the very first foundation is starting out, whether that's Instagram, whether it's LinkedIn, whatever it might be on social media and building up relationships there. Another opportunity is if you do have a connection abroad is how can you maybe establish a smaller hub, whether that's in America, in the UK, Australia, maybe it's a board member, maybe it's somebody that you met, you know, 10 years ago and reconnecting with them. So oftentimes, you know, organizations, whether they're based in Africa and they're wanting to expand, they have one or two people in that other country. And building again up that meaningful relationship. Usually you can like start a 501c3 in America, or, you know, you can have fiscal sponsorships. So definitely don't undermine the power of fiscal sponsorships if you're not ready to start another established arm in a different country.
Gotcha. Okay. One of the other things that we talk about is like the idea of, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, but fractional fundraising. And so that's something that you offer. So how does this, you know, work for, I guess, for the folks that you work with?
Yeah. So we primarily work with North American nonprofits that are working abroad. So are working, have programs abroad, wherever that might be. They've worked really everywhere at this point. But what we do is we go in and we are the fundraiser on the team, but for a fraction of the time, at the fraction of the cost, but we know what we're doing. So we get it done. We get it done well. So what it would pay, you know, for a junior fundraiser is basically what you're paying for us, but we come with the mighty experience. So we come in, and what we do is, with my clients specifically, is I go through a 4-phase approach. So the first phase is assess what is working, what isn't working, what are your barriers, what are your team strengths. We have donor calls, you know, all that good stuff. We then clarify what are 3 main fundraising activities where we're going to see the highest return on investment. Because as fundraisers, as you know, there's just so many different activities that go on. And, you know, oftentimes nonprofits, where they fall flat is because they like saw this one nonprofit doing this cool thing. So that means I must be doing it. And then I'm going to do 10 other different fundraising activities throughout the year. And then I'm really seeing a return on investment. So that's where we clarify and we really hone in. What are 3 fundraising activities where we're going to see the needle actually move? So from there, we then strategize. So we create a fundraising plan, a custom fundraising plan that's 12 months of exactly how are we going to carry out these 3 fundraising activities. And then the fourth phase is implementation, where we go in and actually do the implementation of the fundraising for your nonprofit.
I love the idea, again, not just for international, but for everyone, to really focusing in on, you know, what 3 main things can I work on, right? Like even I have this, I think it's my 90-day plan. You know, this is my night, and I do this quarterly, and it's like three strategies. Like, what are the 3 big things, right? If we can hone it down to like 3, you really can see progress and see things shift when you, like I said, you're just trying so many things and then you're really not getting anything back for what you're putting out, or you're, you know, putting a little bit here, putting a little bit there. I want to go back to something you said about like the assignment and the relationship building. And I love this idea, you know, of just one of the things I say a lot is put the relationship first and the money will follow. And I think that's why sometimes when folks are reaching out, especially on like LinkedIn or on Instagram or whatever, they're saying, it's like, will you marry me? You know, like asking for money is, before you know someone, is asking somebody to marry you on the first date, right? It's too fast. It's too fast. It puts them off. How can I just focus on building relationships, building connections, building, you know, getting to know people, and then see where that takes me? I think we want, and I think what he's saying is, you know, when you're doing the daily work of relationship building, it will pay off eventually. It may not be this day or this week or this month, but it will happen. And that's one of the things that I talk about all the time, is just staying in, you know, giving value. I teach people influence. When I'm a value to you, you'll be a value to me. All I have to worry about, how can I be a value? He said, I would love to learn about your business. You're like, oh, okay. Not asking you for anything, but just what do you do? How can I support you? That's a great way to start a relationship. Don't worry about getting anything back. Don't worry about it. It will happen. When I get emails from people and they're like, and I can feel the desperation, you know, like, we're this tiny village, you know, can you help us? You know, we need money. And I don't know where to go from there. My sweet little codependent heart feels bad, but I don't know what to do, you know?
Sure. Yeah. And at the end of the day, fundraising is relationship building, isn't it? Fundraising is relationship. So you got to have that, again, going back to your foundations and building donor trust and all that, that is relationship building. So I completely agree, is you have to, relationship build.
Okay. This is amazing conversation, and I'm sure it could go on. And I want to share, because you said you have a podcast.
I do, yes. Okay. The Fundraising Mountain Waters podcast.
And this is for just like you're focusing on international organizations. Oh, I love it. What a gift. Okay. So where's the best way to get in touch with you if people want to get in touch with you or tap into some resources that you have to share?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm really active on LinkedIn and Instagram. So at Fundraising Beyond Borders or my personal LinkedIn, I'm more active there. And then head to www.fundraisingbeyondborders.com and head to my resources tab. So I have several free resources there. So we're about to release our 2025 fundraising calendar. So if you're looking, this is specifically for international nonprofits. So if you're looking for some really good info on what should I do for my 2025 fundraising year, there's a great freebie. So tons of resources on my website.
Yay. I love it. Okay. And all that'll be in the show notes. All the links for that will be on the show notes because I know there are people that are going to be so excited to know you and to know that these resources exist. And I love what you're doing. And I think there's a definite need for it. And I think as our world becomes more and more global, right? Like these are the problems and the, you know, problems that people encounter that people like you can help them solve. And I just appreciate that you're doing this.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. This has been so much fun.
Okay. So this is always my last question. Now, the chances of us being in a karaoke bar together seem pretty slim at this point, but you never know.
Never know. I go to St. Louis.
Yeah, never know when you're back at Mizzou. So
I go there every year. So
when you do? Okay, there we go. So I love karaoke. It's my favorite thing. So what is your go-to karaoke song?
I would probably say anything Shania. I'm a Shania Twain girl. So
okay. All right. What's your favorite? What's the favorite? Feel Like a Woman or?
I was just about to say that's classic. Yeah. Feel Like
a
Woman.
You can't go wrong with that. That always gets the crowd going. All right. Well, thank you, Morgan, for being here and sharing all your info. I can't wait. I know there's going to be so many people who are going to be excited to know you. And please take advantage of those resources. And if you want, as usual, connect with me. You can just go to the link in the show notes. And I'm happy to talk with you about how to build better relationships as well. And that's it for me in this episode of The Influential Nonprofit.
Thanks for listening to The Influential Nonprofit with your host, Marianne Dersch. If you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends and colleagues about the podcast. Also, check out theinfluentialnonprofit.com for more resources on growing your influence so you can raise more and do more.